Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest NPR PBS Marist poll that finds 54% of Americans think Trump's dealings with Russia were unethical or illegal, while 73% of Republicans believe Trump did nothing wrong, with only 4% saying he has done something illegal. The author of National Insecurity, American Leadership in an Age of Fear, and The Great Questions of Tomorrow, David Rothkopf, a columnist for The Washington Post and a visiting professor at Columbia University and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, joins us. We will discuss Donald Trump's unprecedented attacks on American political leaders and institutions on foreign soil as he stood next to Poland's authoritarian leader, who was cracking down on his press and was no doubt pleased to hear Trump's attacks on the American press, along with his trashing of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and the U.S. intelligence community. Then we will speak with Timothy McCarthy, a lecturer on history, literature, and public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School and author of Protest Nation, Words That Inspired a Generation, and The Indispensable Zin, The Essential Writings of the People's Historian. He joins us to discuss the extent to which Trump has laid the groundwork with his supporters by convincing them that the press propagates fake news, so that when the real news about Trump's ties to Putin comes out, 35% of Americans won't believe it. Then finally, we will look into the stark division in U.S. foreign policy between the Trump family and his coterie of right-wing fringe ideologues and the broader U.S. defense, intelligence, and diplomatic community, otherwise known as the Deep State, that have been laid bare by Saudi Arabia's attack on Qatar. David Hurst, the editor of Middle East Eye, joins us from the UK to discuss the contentious report on the Saudi role in radicalizing young Muslims in Britain and how Trump and his daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared's financial ties to the Saudi Crown Prince are dictating a dangerous Middle East policy that goes against U.S. interests in the region. And joining us now is David Rothkopf, who is a visiting professor at Columbia University and a columnist at The Washington Post and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and is the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power, and National Insecurity, American Leadership in an Age of Fear. His latest book is The Great Questions of Tomorrow. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
Pleasure to be here.
And what do you make of this new poll that comes out from NPR, PBS, and Marist that finds 54% of Americans believe that Trump's dealing with Russia were unethical or illegal, but 73% of Republicans don't think so, and only 4% of them think he's done anything illegal? So it shows you that Trump has been successful in dividing this country into these kind of silos where his people believe that the mainstream media prints fake news and that he's honest and trustworthy and will fulfill his promises. So, I mean, and here he is in Poland, in Warsaw, trashing the mainstream press, trashing Hillary Clinton, trashing Obama, and trashing the intelligence community on foreign soil. It's extraordinary.
Well, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinarily sad for the United States, but I think we need to keep it in perspective. 70% of the Republican Party is only about 35% of the American people. I think that what we're seeing again and again and again is that there is a group, something like 30-35% of the American people, that will support Trump and will support him in, under any circumstances. I'm sure they feel that they are a kind of resistance to the, you know, the establishment. But of course, some of them are just members of the establishment who see Trump as someone who's likely to feather their nest. And the rest of them are what I would call a kind of permanent information underclass in America, a group of people that rely only on information sources that conform with their opinions. And people who are skeptical of anything that challenges their opinions, regardless of how underpinned it is in fact. And with regard to the Russia thing, which the president, again, in Warsaw today, equivocated on and suggested it might not have been Russia, might not have just been Russia, people don't know. The reality is that the facts are squarely against the president and squarely against the people in Nepal who don't think anything happened there. The Russians did this. Every intelligence agency in the United States government knows it. They have massive amounts of evidence to support it. It's not really at this point a disputable fact. Nobody credible disputes this fact. Whether there's something criminal that the Trump team did or not remains to be seen. But that the Russians hacked, it's almost as though, you know, Trump is the only senior person on the U.S. scene who disputes the facts of that hack.
So since you've been such a longtime student of U.S. foreign policy and have obviously had interactions with all of the architects of American power, as you wrote about in the National Security book about the National Security Council, and have had access to some of the people who've guided U.S. foreign policy over the years, if not decades, this has got to be the most extraordinary change. I mean, for example, Trump didn't meet with the Polish opposition. That's just a given. And you've got Donald Tusk, who's the head of the European Union, who's effectively the head of the Polish opposition. Who's in charge here? What about this reliance we have on the adults in the room, Generals Mattis and General McMaster? They don't seem to be able to stop Trump from doing stuff that's just not unusual, but is insulting and destructive.
Well, they don't, and the reality is the people that think that they do are increasingly being shown up. We saw it again today. President Trump delivers a speech that was written for him. The speech is, you know, stronger than what he kind of thing he normally says off the cuff. People give him high marks for acknowledging things that every American president has acknowledged for 75 years because Trump has failed so often to do that. And then he does a press conference, and during the press conference, he does a number of things off the cuff because he is ill-prepared and inexperienced and doesn't seem to care about that are just shocking. You know, he attacks his predecessor. He attacks the free press. Not only does he attack the free press and talk this fake news talk again, but he does it standing next to a Polish president who is currently in the midst of suppressing his own press and denying his own press access to the legislature. So he sends a message. He stands next to an enemy of a free press, and he says, hey, you know, I'm sort of alongside with you. He calls into question whether the Russians did this hack. He even, you know, says, well, you know, everybody says that 17 agencies of the U.S. intelligence community backed this report. Do we even have 17 agencies? Well, you know, all it takes is a Google search to discover that we have 17 agencies. Any intern in the United States government who wants to work in the security area can Google it and know that we have 17 intelligence agencies. And the president of the United States jokes as if we don't. It's appalling. And, you know, it's produced consequences. Today, the EU and Japan announced the biggest trade deal in the world in the past 20 years between the EU and Japan, sending a very clear message that if the United States is opting out of the world leadership on trade, they will step up. And this is what is happening. Trump, through ignorance, as a result of planning, as a result of the extremism of some of his supporters, is embracing a policy that is dismantling at a record pace the role that America has had as a leader since the end of the Second World War. And, you know, I had a very interesting experience at the Aspen Ideas Festival last week where I asked General David Petraeus, who is a kind of a supporter of Trump foreign policy, if he thought the president was fit to serve. And he said to me, I think that's immaterial because, you know, of these adults around him. Now, first of all, when your supporters don't say, of course he's fit to serve, instead say it's immaterial, that's pretty shocking. But I think, you know, it's kind of sad for Petraeus to rely on the Mattis and McMasters of this world to influence Trump when there's so much evidence that they don't. Trump on Friday is going to meet with Vladimir Putin with Rex Tillerson and a translator. He's not even bringing his national security advisor, McMaster, into the meeting. Why?
Let alone Fiona Hill.
let alone his Russia expert.
Right.
And Lord knows, you know, Trump hasn't been sitting there poring over histories of Russia, right? He gets his briefings in the form of little tweet-length talking points, which he typically sets aside. So, you know, this is just a setup. Mm-hmm. You know, Putin, an experienced old hand, is the wolf entering the room, you know, and Trump is the roast goose on a platter. And Putin will get what he wants out of this meeting, and Trump's, you know, going to once again damage American interests through his own sort of narcissism and failure to recognize his own self-limitations.
Well, clearly in business, maybe his tactics of keeping everybody off balance worked, you know, maybe in these Manhattan real estate deals. But my sense is that obviously, keeping people off balance may be a polite way of saying he doesn't know what the hell's going on. But let's assume that there's a tactic behind this chaos. Isn't that the worst possible thing that you can practice in global leadership and foreign policy? I always understood that foreign policy depended upon consistency and reliability and commitment.
And not to mention expertise and having a set of goals and working with your allies and working with your own assets within the United States government. He doesn't do any of those things. I think we need to sort of wake up to the fact that Donald Trump was not a successful businessman. He did not run a big public company. He ran a family business. And that's very different because you're not answerable to anybody. And secondly, he ran it in a way where he regularly encountered failure and bankruptcy and where he didn't really make anything. What Donald Trump was his whole life was a guy who did branding, sold the Trump brand. And when you're selling a brand, when what you're doing is essentially promoting your name, all press is good press. And you know, Donald Trump is essentially the pre-Kardashian Kardashian. You know, he was out there, you know, at Studio 54 or getting married again or doing whatever he was doing, and he built some buzz. And he got elected that way because he managed to build more buzz than the other candidates around him. None of that is translatable to being president of the United States. It doesn't help our interests. Bad press for us is actually bad for our interests. It doesn't help him govern. He has no real experience running a big complex organization. And his propensity for delegating, because he doesn't actually have any interest in substance, is undermined by the desire of him and some of his supporters not to actually populate the key positions in the government to which one might delegate, the undersecretaries and deputy secretaries and so forth. So 550 out of 600 positions in the United States government that are supposed to be filled by presidential appointees have yet to be filled by them, not because the positions have been blocked by the Democrats, but because the Republicans haven't put anybody up. The guy's a disaster. And as I wrote this week in the Washington Post, I think that the single biggest security threat to the United States of America is the president of the United States of America, because he's erratic, ill-suited to the job, undercutting our leadership, undermining our interests, and playing into the hands of our enemies.
Well, I guess the lesson here is that elections have consequences and that people should realize that the president has enormous powers. And in spite of this man's reckless incompetence, it does seem that he's able to almost treat the White House as an acquisition. He's continues to make money. It seems that most of his foreign policy decisions are based upon flattery and who likes him. The Polish guy promised him adoring crowds. The dictator in Turkey has business dealings, at least his cronies do, with Trump, as is the case in Manila. That's why he's been nice to that murderous leader in the Philippines. And my understanding is that MBS, the boy king in Saudi Arabia, has forged a friendship with Jared Kushner. And already Ivanka Trump has gotten $100 million for her foundation. And there's some rumors that Trump's working on with the Saudis to fund his re-election. So this is what I find extraordinary. How come, you know, we can't lay a glove on this guy when he's so brazenly corrupt?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say we can't lay a glove on this guy. The reality is we just haven't done it yet. We're 6 months into this thing. I mean, 3 weeks into the thing, his national security advisor had to resign. His national security advisor is now facing the choice of going to jail or flipping on the president. No wonder the president of the United States is being nice to this guy 4.5 months after firing him. But, you now have a special prosecutor at the earliest point that you ever had one in an administration. There are a special, counsel looking into this thing. You've got multiple committees on the Hill looking into this thing. Some of them are going to dig deeper. Something will be found. And I think, there's quite a good possibility the president of the United States is going to be called out on this. But I think your bigger point gets to a different lesson altogether, and that is 35% of the American people are living in an information bubble, eating the garbage that is fed to them by Fox News, believing what they want to believe, and there is nothing that a Democratic candidate or Republican candidate or occupant of higher office is going to do to change their minds, which means that anytime we have an election, they're a given. They're going in a certain direction. And so you have to go and look at the remaining 30% or 40% of the Republican Party and the center and the Democratic Party to determine who's actually going to win the next election. Because there is a group here that is immune to facts, that is allergic to facts. We're not going to reason with them. We are not going to persuade them, because what they believe is complete nonsense, that even a cursory look at the daily newspaper or a cursory amount of research would prove to be untrue. They're just unwilling to make that effort.
But you're still talking about an opposition of 65%. That's a solid majority. I don't see a particular narrative coming from the Democrats. There's so many Democrats that I speak to on the liberal progressive side who are completely invested in Trump being impeached, but they don't have an alternative reality. We saw what happened down in Georgia with the guy that didn't even live in the district, whose campaign platform was "let's be nice to each other." Isn't there a deficit in terms of, I mean, Trump, we know he got $5 billion worth of free advertising. We know how he's a train wreck that, the press are attracted to the bright shining light of chaos. But in the meantime, don't we need a little bit of dignity, a little bit of sobriety, and a real alternative message?
Of course we do. And I don't think the Democratic Party or the Republican Party has focused much on what's the message for tomorrow in a long time. They focused on obstruction, or they focused on the past, or they focused on character assassination. They've made everything personal. They've made it petty, and they've focused on the short term. And of course, as a country on the verge of major technological changes, major demographic changes, major cultural changes in the makeup of our society, major changes in the way that our economy works, that jobs are created, that wealth is created, we need people who have an agenda for the future. We should look around the world and say, are there examples of situations like ours? And I think one that we might look at is France, where both political parties became so distrusted that a candidate emerged without any relationship to the established political parties, but who offered something that seemed like a credible alternative in Emmanuel Macron. And he actually won. A centrist candidate, but one who is 39 years old, somebody who has a kind of outsider image, but who'd also been the finance minister and understood how the government worked, who had an agenda that took into consideration the needs of the people of France and the future of the economy, and it worked. And I think we need to look at other examples of people who are coming along who've got compelling agendas, whether it's, outside of the country, people like Justin Trudeau or in Canada, or inside the country, mayors or others who are solving problems on a daily basis. But there is no question that, the leadership of both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is intellectually bankrupt and has suffered failures of creativity that in any other business would have had them pink slipped and out the door in no time. I think this is the crisis of America. It's not Trump, who's a symptom of the crisis. We've elected a boob to be president of the United States, and we're paying the price for it. But even 6 months into that, I can't tell you who the leader of the opposition is in the Democratic Party. I can't tell you where the next big idea is. I can't tell you who's sitting there saying, this is how we're going to create jobs, and this is how we're going to reduce inequality, and this is how we're going to fix our infrastructure, and this is how we're going to create a healthcare or education system for the 21st century. I know those issues need to be addressed, and I bet if you and I got together in a room, we could make a list of people who might solve the problem. But that isn't happening in the Democratic Party. It's not happening in the Republican Party. And if that's the case, and Trump does get called to task and he does get thrown out of office, you're going to end up with Mike Pence, who is actually ideological, knows some stuff, and in some respects is even more dangerous than Trump. And again, will play to this base of know-nothings who are supporting Trump. So we've got a crisis, and the crisis isn't the current leader. The crisis is who's the next leader.
Well, David Rothkopf, you've given us a lot to think about, and I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with David Rothkopf, who's a columnist at the Washington Post and a visiting professor at Columbia University and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and National Insecurity, American Leadership in an Age of Fear. His latest book is The Great Questions of Tomorrow. We're going to take a brief station break back, looking into how Trump has laid the groundwork with his supporters, convincing them that the press propagates fake news, so that when the real news about Trump ties to Putin comes out, 35% of Americans won't believe it.